War when it seemed as though the South might win. Abraham Lincoln went riding with his friend Noah Brooks. And Noah Brooks saw the fatigue on the face of the president. And he advised that when they got back to the White House, that his friend take a nap. He said it would help him. And Abraham Lincoln looked at him and he said, "I don't know much about what you mean by a nap or rest, but I'll tell you this, that I am tired, and the tired part is inside of me, and it's out of reach." There's a way in which life can find you in those places, can't it? It's called weariness. It's where you're tired, you're worn, there's a cloud that seems to have overtaken you, and it's out of reach. No amount of physical rest that you could pursue would touch the part of you that's tired. It's possible in your life that you make good decisions, and you make good decisions after good decisions. And instead of life getting better, it seems that all things fall apart, and you move farther and farther from the goal that you had in mind. It's possible that as you look at your finances and you spend month after month after month trying to make a 30 days on a 22-day paycheck, and you make good decisions and you serve the Lord, but in that time it seems like again you fall farther behind. Maybe you look at your children and maybe they're grown, and you watch their lives and you pray, and you know you raised them right, you raised them to honor the Lord. And yet their lives tend to be on a road that takes them farther and farther from the way that you instructed them. It's called weariness. And if you feel that way this morning, I think I have a word from the Lord for you in Galatians chapter 6. The Spirit speaks through the apostle and he says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart." Amen. What the Spirit is saying to us in this passage is that God understands what it means to get weary. He understands what that feels like. And so He gives us this passage so that you will not grow weary, so that you and I will not lose heart, because He knows that there's a temptation in all of us to grow weary, to lose heart, to give up, and to quit. And so He gives us some illustrations here. He tells us some things that you and I think, ought to be aware of. And the first thing he tells us is that don't worry. If you have sown correctly, you will reap accordingly. He says, don't worry about that. There is a law in place. There is a law that God has set in place. God is not mocked. And there's this law that says, if you do right, you will reap accordingly. And so don't worry about that. Don't think that what you're doing doesn't matter. Don't think that the good that you've done has gone unseen by God. Don't think that the sacrifices you have made are unseen and are worthless. They are not worthless to you. He said, because life is like this. It's like gardening. What you put in the ground ultimately comes up. I think that it's strange that in almost every aspect of life, we realize that life is governed by irrefutable laws. Life is governed in the science realm by gravity. And it's a law that's pretty much irrefutable. It's hard to deny. It affects everybody, and it affects everybody. Law of gravity. You jump off a building, the law of gravity takes over. And you may be falling, and you may be very, very sorry for the mistake that you've made, but it doesn't affect the law of gravity in your life. When you look at your body, The law of gravity will have its effect. Surgery might prevent it just a little bit from having its full effect. But sooner or later, gravity affects us all. There's a law that governs sowing in the field. Apple trees beget apples. Orange trees beget oranges. Grapevines beget grapes. And you don't see that law broken. There are laws that govern the economics of a country. And those laws are very difficult to overwhelm. For instance, there's supply and demand. And where there's a great amount of supply, there's a low demand. You don't get the price that you would want. And where there's a limited supply, you tend to be able to get a higher price. There's greater demand. And so when we look at the world and we see a storm that's affecting one of the major oil fields in the world, we know what's going to happen. Our gas prices are going to go up. That's the way it is. There's a law that governs economics. And what Paul is saying here through the Spirit is that that's true in the moral realm. There are laws in the moral realm. There are laws in the spiritual realm that you really can't flirt with. You can try to beat them, but ultimately you're not going to succeed. And it's called reaping and sowing. The behaviors that you do are put into the ground. There's an old sermon that was preached. It was the most famous sermon in the last 100 years preached in America. It was preached over 1,000 times by R.G. Smith, and the title of it was Payday Someday. That's a stirring title, isn't it? There's a payday someday. The seeds go into the ground, and the harvest has got to come up someday. Now, that's bad news for some people. That's bad news for some people. Because what you do negatively will have a negative effect in your life. But Paul isn't telling you that to cause you trouble. He's telling you that to encourage you. He's saying, I'm telling you that what you do matters. It's like seeds going into the ground. It will produce a harvest. And I'm telling you that so that you don't grow weary, so you don't stop. So he says, I want to remind you of that. He said, however, you need to understand, it's like seeds going into the ground, so what you do matters. However, you also have to understand that there's a time span between the seeds going in and the harvest growing up. If you don't remember that, you might grow weary. If you don't remember that what you are doing matters, you might grow weary. But if you don't remember that there's a time span between what you do and the payoff, you might grow weary too. See, we live in a society and we don't like to wait. We really don't like to wait. We like to enjoy it before we can afford it. We like to sleep with it before we marry it. We like to have it before we've paid for it. What Paul is saying again is that you ought not think that life works that way. There's reaping and there's sowing. So don't grow weary when you're experiencing the gap between the two. That's how some people get their lives messed up and make really poor decisions, right? You know what happens when you stay out in the sun in your teens and your 20s? You get a really great tan. Now, it's not till later that you see that, oh, there's skin damage that was done. But that comes far later in life. I almost finished reading the biography of Peggy Lee, who was a great singer in the 20th century. And here's the thing about Peggy Lee, right? She was a functioning alcoholic, and she frequently abused prescription drugs. And she was doing that in her early 20s, but it didn't really affect her singing all that much because she had an incredible work ethic. And so her 20s and her 30s and about midway through her 40s, you wouldn't have known that she was an alcoholic, and you wouldn't have known that she was a drug abuser. But if you look at her at the age of 35 and then at the age of 50, now you see the difference, because her body completely broke down between really about 45 and 50 is when she went off the cliff. See, You can do a lot of drinking, and you can do a lot of abuse of your body in your teens and your 20s, And the problem is that you don't think it's making any difference because you're functioning at a very high level. But at some point, it does betray your body, and it might be 20 years down the road. I read the biography of Joe DiMaggio earlier this year, and Joe DiMaggio was one of the 10 great athletes during his time. He was a phenomenal athlete. But what you probably don't know about Joe DiMaggio is that he would play the outfield for the New York Yankees, and in between innings, he would sit in the hallway between the dugout and the locker room, and between all the innings, he would sit, and they had it waiting on him. He had a cup of coffee and a cigarette between all the innings. And he, even when he was a great ball player, he was smoking 2 to 3 packs a day. And it didn't matter. He was a great athlete. It didn't affect him so much in his 20s and 30s. It wasn't until he got much later in life that he couldn't climb a set of stairs without gasping for breath. That's the way life is. It's seeds that go in, and there can be this huge gap between the cause and the effect in life. That's the point of the passage. When you look at a field that's been sown with seeds, oftentimes it doesn't look like much has been accomplished. It doesn't look like anything has happened. All you see is dirt, and you say, is anything good going to come from that? But the seeds are in the ground. And that's why you always have to have faith. What is faith? Opposite of faith is not unbelief. The opposite of faith is walking by sight. 2 Corinthians 5:7 says, we walk by faith and not by sight. And so you have to have faith, or you have to look at the situation and not go entirely on what you see, because you've done good. You've served the Lord, and you look at it and you say, I've served the Lord in vain. Nothing good has come from that. But that's not what you should see. You ought to hear the word of the Lord, which says, the seed goes in and it will produce a harvest. You have to walk by that word and not by sight. That's what Columbo's about, right? We've talked about that before, I believe. The whole show of Columbo is based on people walking by sight and not by faith. He always gets his man. He always gets the criminal. But when they look at him, they always walk by sight, right? He's driving that little French car, wearing the messed up coat with the fluffy hair, asking you a ton of stupid questions, and they end up always walking by sight, not by faith. You always get caught, right? That's sort of what Monk's about too, isn't it? The show in the 90s. You have to walk by faith, not by sight, because if the seed's in the ground, if you serve the Lord, if it's there, oftentimes the harvest doesn't come till much later, and it doesn't look like anything happened. It's just laying dormant. You have to remember that. I was thinking about some of those folks in the Old Testament, you know. Think about Naaman, Kings chapter 5. Naaman's the Syrian general. He's got leprosy. He's got sores all over his body. He goes to Elisha the prophet. Elisha says, the Lord will heal you, but go dip yourself in the Jordan 7 times. He goes and he starts dipping himself in the Jordan. You know what I would have done if I was God? And you ought to be very grateful that I'm not God, by the way. And as grateful that you're not God. But you know what I would have done? If I was God, when Naaman dipped himself in the Jordan and came up, just to encourage him, I'd have removed a few of his sores. And then Naaman would have said, oh, it's working. And then he'd have gone down the second time. And if I was God, I would have removed a few more of the sores. And because I would have wanted to keep Naaman motivated, I would have wanted to keep him encouraged. So each time he goes down, I would have removed a little bit, a few more of his sores. And then the 7th time he goes down and comes up, he would have been completely clean, completely healed. But I'm not God. You know what God does to him? 6 times Naaman goes down, Six times he comes up. He's got every sore still on him. It's not till the seventh time he goes down that he comes up and the harvest of his obedience is seen. He's healed, and it says that his skin is like that of a little boy. The harvest came late. There's all of this obedience, but there's no sign that it's working. You have that when the children of Israel go around the walls of Jericho, don't you? I mean, if I was God and they're walking around the walls of Jericho, God says, go around seven times and I'll give you the city. But if they went around the first time, I'd have just let a few little bricks fall, you know? Just give them a little sign that this is working, that they're on the right track. I mean, you can imagine the guy, you know, putting on his armor. He's going out. He tells his wife, hey, we're gonna go against the city today. They walk around the city. He comes home. She says, how'd it go? He said, well, we scoped it out. Got a good view of what we're dealing with here. Nothing happened, though. And then the second time, you know, I'd have let a few more bricks fall. I would have just given them a sign of progress. But you know what? He doesn't. The city stays still till the seventh time, and then the walls come tumbling down. They're obedient, but they don't see any result of their obedience. You want to know the ultimate example in the Bible? That's Moses. Because God sends Moses to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. He goes, and God's going to work with him, and Moses is going to work, and they're going to be co-laborers together. And so what God starts to do is he starts to send plagues on Egypt to soften them up. At least if you're Moses, that's what you're thinking. God's going to send some plagues. And then the plagues are sort of going to have the effect of prying the children of Israel out of the hands of the Pharaoh. And as the plagues come, Pharaoh's going to get softer, and he's going to say, wow, I really shouldn't be holding these people. And as each plague comes, Pharaoh's going to get a little softer, and then he's going to release the children. I mean, if I'm Moses, that's what I'm thinking. You know what the Bible says? After each plague, Pharaoh hardened his heart. After nine plagues, Pharaoh's heart got harder. It worked the opposite. Moses thinks it's going to, you know, sort of soften deliverance. Instead, it's harder, 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 harder. And if you're Moses, you got to say, this isn't working. This is going in reverse. But he's obedient. He's doing what God's called him to do. And it's not until the 10th plague that Moses leads those children out of Egypt that Pharaoh gives them up. All I'm trying to tell you is this, and this is a very simple point I know. Sometimes a seed lays in the ground for years and you don't see the profit of it. You don't. You've done what's right. You've served the Lord. But you don't get to see even a little bit of progress. You're not even sure you're headed in the right direction. You're not even sure if God has seen. In fact, things seem to be getting worse, not better. But again, God says, if the seed's in the ground, a harvest is on the way. There may be some time there. That's why you have to pray sometimes. You just have to look at the Lord and you have to say, Lord, the seed's in the ground. I mean, I loved my kids. I was the same at church as I was at home. I did not play the hypocrite in front of my kids. We put you first in our family. I didn't put you second after every sporting event, after every family get-together, after every cough. We put you first. My life. We were there. You were important to us. I didn't outsource my responsibility as a parent to the church. I taught my kids how to pray. I taught my kids the Bible. I didn't put it off on some Sunday school teacher. I did it because you told us to do it. The seed's in the ground. The seed's in the ground. I raise them as they should. And I just have to believe that when they are old, they will not depart from the raising that I gave them because I put the seed in there. Sometimes when you're going through it financially, you have to pray, Lord, the seed's in the ground. The seed's in the ground. I have honored you in my finances. Everything that I have came from you. Everything that I have belongs to you. And I have given back as you have given to me. I have not neglected the poor in my life. I have not walked away from my responsibilities. I understand why my finances are in this way, but I know this. The seed is in the ground, and I'm expecting a harvest. Sometimes you're in a place of conflict in your family, and you say, I know the words. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. I have worked to be a peacemaker. I have not stirred up conflict. I have forgiven and forgiven and forgiven. And I have prayed for those who have used me in this situation. I understand why there's still conflict. And I don't understand why our family still can't get together. But the seeds of peace have been put in the ground. I believe that a harvest will come from the seeds that have been put in the ground. There might be a gap there. Because, and I'm going to have to go on faith because I don't see it. The field looks barren to me. But your word says you reap what you sow and the seeds are in the ground. Now, there's another way in which you might grow weary. And I just want to mention this here at the end. Sometimes you grow weary because you don't think what you're doing matters. You don't think there's going to be a harvest. Sometimes you grow weary because you forget there's a gap between the sowing and the reaping. And in the middle, you got to walk by faith. But sometimes you grow weary too when you forget how the reaping sometimes happens. See, I'm American, which means I'm pretty individualistic. I was raised in this culture to be individualistic. And so when I'm thinking sowing and reaping, I tend to think what I've done will produce a harvest for me. And that's often the case. That's the principle. But sometimes the things that you and I do, the harvest isn't so much for us, but for others. So we sow the seeds and others reap the harvest. And we grow weary if we think, well, there's not much happening in my life out of this. And we neglect to look on the fields and those around us and see, yes, but what I'm doing is having an impact on so many people around me. They're reaping what I've sowed. I have a friend who's a pastor, and we were talking this week, and he mentioned a friend of his who lives in India, and he's a pastor. And the church that he pastors is in the middle of town, and on one side of town is a Hindu constituency. On the other side of town is the Islamic constituency. And they get a lot of persecution from those two wings. And in fact, they've built the baptistry in the middle of the town so that when people get baptized, both the Islamic folks and the Hindu folks can see it. And folks who go into that baptistry know that their life is changing because people just saw what happened and their life's going to be negatively affected. He said, when he's in town, I have him preach. When he's in the States, I invite him to preach. And he said he always starts his sermon by telling the people how they can pray for his work in India. And he'll tell them the needs. But then he always says before he preaches, but one thing I don't want you to pray for. Please don't pray that the persecution stops. Because it is the persecution that drives the growth of my church. And you think about that. Here are these people being persecuted. And that's like a seed going into the ground. Their suffering, their faithfulness in spite of the suffering is like a seed going in. And the harvest is that many, many, many people are being delivered and are coming to Christ because of the seeds that they are sowing in their pain. It was that way with Jesus, wasn't it? There was a place in the Bible where he's talking to Andrew and Nathaniel, I believe. And he says, the time's come and I've got to die. I've got to go to the cross. But Jesus said, see, it's like this. He said, most assuredly I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much grain. And he's talking about his body, of course. His flesh, his body, crucified on the cross, put into the grave, resurrects the third day. But because his body is crucified and put into the grave, you and I can now have redemption of sins. We can be delivered from our sins because of his body, which was a seed that went into the ground. And the harvest is the redemption of you and I and millions and millions and millions of others. Now, if Jesus had just said, you know, I'm suffering, I'm going into the ground, and if all he focused was on what was his reward, which he did get a reward, by the way, he sits at the right hand of the Father. But that was only part of the reward part of the harvest, because the rest of the harvest was what it did for you and I. And sometimes when you're suffering physically, and sometimes when you're in pain, you say, it hurts. And I've been faithful in this suffering. I've been faithful in this situation. And when is my harvest going to come? When is my healing going to come? Sometimes there is a healing. But sometimes people watch what you do in the midst of that suffering. And as you are faithful, there's nothing more powerful in this world than the person who is suffering, than a person who is going through great difficulty, who yet stands and praises the Lord. You want to talk about power? That encourages people. That emboldens people. That represents Christ in a way that our faithfulness in the good times would never do. And you're missing the point if all you can see is when am I going to get mine. You have to see that God is using that seed that you planted to produce a kingdom type harvest in your life. And you have to be aware of that, or you'll grow weary in well-doing. You'll say it's not working. And you don't see all the people who are able to face their problems because you're able to face your problems with the help of God. So oftentimes you have to look at your life. And you have to enlarge upon your prayer. And so as you pray to the Lord, you have to say, Lord, you've seen my life. I've tried to honor you with my life. In every way that I've known how, I've tried to please you. I've tried to pursue your will for my life. The seed is in the ground. Lord, I pray that you will produce a harvest in my life. And maybe it's not the recovery that I would hope. Maybe it's not going to be a personal harvest for me, maybe as my flesh would like. But use the seeds that I've planted. Use my faithfulness to produce a harvest in the life of others. As Jesus Christ died to himself and died literally, and that harvest that was produced affected the entire world. Lord, if I must suffer, let that be the seeds that go into the ground that produces a harvest in my children and my grandchildren. Produce a harvest in my life with the seeds that I've planted. Have to enlarge upon your life. You'll grow weary and you'll lose heart if you think what you're doing doesn't matter. It does matter. You'll grow weary if you don't understand that there's a gap between the sowing and the reaping. And you'll sometimes grow weary if you're looking for an individual fulfillment of the harvest and not a kingdom fulfillment of the harvest in your life. But Jesus says, Paul, don't grow weary. Go another lap. And in fact, if you were here, if you're here today and you're in a difficult place, I would give you this advice. If you act like the harvest is going to be today, someday you'll be right. So I would always live in expectation that the seeds are in the ground and the harvest is going to come up. And someday That's going to be true. And if you live in anticipation, someday you're going to be right. And I think what Paul would say is living in anticipation. Don't grow weary. Don't lose heart. If the seeds are in the ground, a harvest is on the way. Maybe today you need to reaffirm your faith. Maybe you're walking by sight and you don't like what you see. It's not going to work if you walk by sight. But if the seeds are there, walk by faith. Sometimes you have to come to the Lord and say, increase my faith. Increase my faith. You see what my kids are doing. Increase my faith. You see where my finances are at. Increase my faith. You see where my health is at. Increase my faith. And he can do that. Time and time again in the Bible, people would pray, give me faith. And you know what the Lord does? He doesn't beat you up. He'll give you faith, more faith, and more faith. Will you stand with me?